This is Echo Zoe Radio, episode 76 for August 2014 with Ryan Habana on the Holy Land.
Welcome to Echo Zoe Radio, the podcast outreach of Echo Zoe Ministries, where you'll hear about important topics affecting the church today. Our primary goal is to explore a variety of issues while remaining faithful to God and His Word. Stay with us for the next hour as your host, Andy Olson, shares his conversation with this month's guest. Here's your host, Andy Olson.
I'm Andy Olson. Thanks for listening to Echo Zoe Radio. This is episode 76 for August 2014. My guest for this episode is Ryan Habana, and Ryan is joining us as the president of Mount Moriah Foundation, an organization that seeks, among other things, to bring believers to the Holy Land on tours that bring new depth and appreciation for the scriptures. The nature of this episode is such that typical show notes don't work out as they usually do, but nonetheless, you can check out the post for this specific episode at echozoe.com/76. The interview is a bit longer than usual, with a lot to cover in just a short time, so let's jump right into my discussion with Ryan. Well, welcome back, Ryan. It's great to have you back in studio yet again. And
good to be here, as always, and good to be here to speak of the things that we experienced a few months back as we were blessed to go and scope out the land, spy out the land.
Yeah, and that is our topic, as we're going to talk about the land of Israel, and we're going to talk about it as seen if you were to go over there and take a tour. Some of it's a little bit self-serving. We took this tour through an organization that we're both members of the board on, and we're planning another trip and hoping that maybe we can get people that might be interested in going with us in 2016 as we return. But originally the plan for this was I brought my little recorder that I use. And I really hoped that I could sit down with our tour guide, Aaron, for maybe 5 or 6 minutes every day and just talk really briefly about what we saw that day. And Aaron was a fantastic tour guide and could have been a great episode, but circumstances didn't really allow for it. And it didn't work out. And then you and I kind of got to be too tired by the end of the day. We just want to have dinner and crash.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't bite off more than we can chew, but on the other hand, everybody that's on the trip is always ready to. Everybody sleeps well after they get over jet lag, at least, because not only is it can it be physically exhausting, but it also can be mentally exhausting because you're processing so much information, and that's one thing that I have been there three times, twice as a guide. And so I've been able to get a lot of feedback, and one of the things that people have stressed is how if they've only been there once, they really want to go back because they feel better prepared to be able to take it in, because there's just so much information. And that's the way it has to be, in one sense. You don't want to go to Israel and take a light tour, in a sense, because you really have no idea whether or not you will have the opportunity to get back.
Right, right. And the way you described it is a little bit misleading, or a little bit, it's hard to communicate when you say you're exhausted, or, you know, it's not like you get home and you're just like achy and can't move, or when I say home, you get back to your hotel, you know, it's, you're moving a lot, but I am not in shape. And I mean, it might look like it, but in shape.
Do we have the video cameras rolling here?
And we had people with that were a little bit older. Your wife was pregnant.
Yeah.
So
it's doable.
It's doable. It is. There's a lot of walking, but it's not hard, grueling walking.
Right. And there's there's always options on some of the more difficult hikes.
Sure.
To take the easier path, or to even take the bus to the end. And
we'll get to
some of the ones that There are definitely ones that even I experience that I'll be warning people.
Yeah.
But we'll discuss that as we reach them.
We're really going to be pressed for time on this because there's so much to cover, so much to talk about, so much of interest that we're just going to have to jump right in and we're going to go through some sites. Some of them we'll have maybe a few minutes to talk about. Some of them we'll just kind of mention, hey, we went there, it was a neat site, and we'll move on.
Right.
But we saw a lot. I've got a list here. I went through all my pictures and try to make a list of all the sites that we saw, and day by day, just looking at the pictures I took, and I got over 30 of them here on the site. So if we try to keep this at an hour, we've got an average of 2 minutes each to talk about them, which really doesn't do it justice, but
right.
We're going to try to do what we can and talk a little bit about the scripture behind it and the interest, and because it's really fascinating, and it's a lifetime opportunity kind of trip if people can go.
And that's really the thing that I stress when I am looking to invite people along on the trip is that this will fortify your faith in a way that you really can't articulate unless you've experienced it.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, as I've noted, part of your faith in one sense is fulfilled. Because faith is that which is unseen, and so many of us have never seen the promised land. And you have the opportunity to go and actually see these places, which many of them certainly have a look and feel that have not changed in 2,000 years. So
yeah.
it's an amazing experience, and you'll never read your Bible the same.
Right. So before we get to specific sites, I'm just going to kind of paint a picture of how we as our tour went through. And we were a tour, we had a great tour, perfect size. We had 17 people, which is big enough that it gets us the financial discounts to get into the sites and relieve some of that cost burden of traveling overseas like that. But small enough that it gave us some amazing flexibility to be able to change on a hour-by-hour basis what we're going to do and have just the flexibility that you really got to have over there. So much better. If anybody's been over there and you've been on a huge tour with 100 or 200, 300 people, or you've got multiple buses, we had a totally different experience. And hopefully by the time we're done, you're going to be talked into wanting to come back and see it our way.
Oh, and that's the other thing too, is when I set these tours up, I have a rule that I've kind of set myself with is that I'd never go beyond one bus. And a bus usually carries about 40 people in Israel. And even that's kind of stretching it a little bit. When you get too many people, and I've talked to so many people that have gone on tours with a lot of people, and they come back saying we loved it, but we feel like we missed so much because of the way the tour was handled, because you're just shuffled in and out so quick.
Yeah, and the bus itself, the way you structured it, works out so well, because on our tour, we only took up about half the bus, and everybody had a window seat.
Yeah.
Married couples are sitting in behind each other, front, ahead and behind of each other. And everybody's sitting along the window, so everybody can see the land as we're driving from site to site and
right.
really take it in. And even then, with everybody getting a window seat, we still had maybe half the bus filled.
Right.
And there was oftentimes my wife and I were the only people sitting together. Everybody else was front and back and
right.
looking out the window and stuff. But so to start off, if you can kind of picture, maybe you've got a map of Israel in front of you, or you can picture the land of Israel. We start off at the Tel Aviv airport, and immediately we headed to Netanya, which is along the Mediterranean coast, spent the night. And then we spent that first day kind of seeing that northwestern kind of along the Mediterranean kind of portion of Israel. And then we headed up towards Galilee. And we spent a few days in Galilee, the Golan Heights and whatnot. Really enjoyed that before heading down towards the Dead Sea in southern Israel. And once that was done, we about halfway through the tour, we ended up in Jerusalem, where we stayed for the remainder of our tour. So that'll paint kind of a broad picture of how we're going to walk through the different sites of Israel and what we saw. So that first site, we stayed in Netanya, which is a modern city on the coast of the Mediterranean. Really, the point of Netanya was just to get a hotel room for the night.
Yeah, and it's a nice place to go in because after you fly in, most people are tired. I mean, with the time change and the flight, you go to Netanya. It's kind of halfway up the coast already, so you're ready to really jump right to your first site, which is just to the north. So we get up early that first day and we head up to a really awesome archaeological site called Caesarea Maritima. And Caesarea Maritima is just a great place to start, because you're going to there we learned we heard the name Herod the Great for the first time during the tour.
There's a lot of Herod on this tour.
Yeah, and Herod was great, and great meaning he was great at building things. Mm-hmm. He was, as we know, the biblical record of him, he is not so great. He's actually a tool of the enemy. But Herod built a lot of things, and we'll stress those things as we go along. But he built this huge city, really, in Marina. And this was a port city that we read a lot about in the scriptures. And there's a really good multimedia presentation that they have there that enables us to look at what it looked like back during the time of our Lord. And I think the primary biblical aspect of Caesarea has to do with what we read in Acts. Certainly, Caesarea was the city where Cornelius was, where Peter went up to speak with Cornelius. And then we have this was the place where Paul was in prison for 2 years while he was awaiting, after he was arrested in Jerusalem. And in fact, we're pretty confident that we can stand probably in the very vicinity where he would have stood trial before Agrippa and Festus.
Mm-hmm. From Caesarea, we headed up to Mount Carmel, which is an amazing sight to see. Mount Carmel, and then the Jezreel Valley, you see as you're kind of coming up to, there's a little building there. We talk about Mount Carmel, what happened there with Elijah, and then you walk up and get to see this amazing view of the Jezreel Valley.
Mm-hmm. And I've noted this to my groups. There are a couple places in the tour which take my breath away every time I do it, and this is one of them. When you go up to the top of the monastery, I try to get everybody on the tour not to peek, mm-hmm. because the view is so amazing from up there that first view literally is something that is so vast and expansive that you literally there's a gasp of breath when you see how amazing it is. And of course, so much of scriptural history has gone on in the Jezreel Valley with the conflicts that we read about in Judges and during the kingships. And of course, we have the Battle of Harmageddon, or the Hill of Megiddo, which is situated very close to the mountains or the Carmel mountain range. So that's why that's known by many as the Valley of Armageddon. And it was, yeah, that's an amazing site. That's a great site for the first kind of full day of touring, because you really get an amazing view of what this land really looks like, and an experience that kind of the glorious view of the expanse of, it's also called the Plain of Esdraelon.
Okay. And it's the connection of Elijah to the prophets of Baal there, and that whole story there is also interesting. And you get those both kind of a 1-2 punch right there on that site.
Right. And that's the one thing that we do at this, you know, during half of the tour is seeing the sites, but the other half is getting the significance behind the sites. So mm-hmm. we oftentimes sit down for an extended period of time and open our Bibles and look at what the scriptures say about this place and its significance, and ultimately how it contributed to the flow of salvation history. And we did that in Mount Carmel. We sat there and mm-hmm. considered what occurred with Elijah and the prophets of Baal on that mountain.
Right. From there, we went toward Nazareth. We didn't go into Nazareth, but we went up Mount Precipice, so they kept calling it. And I didn't realize that was actually the name of the mountain. I thought, well, that's kind of a funny name. But this is the location where, one of the locations where a crowd attempted to throw Jesus off the cliff.
Right, and it's so this is one of the proposed locations, and that's one of the things that we have the system in.
I was just going to go there. Why don't we bring up that system?
Yeah, the system of ascertaining whether a site is authentic or mm-hmm. not, and the number. So really, we have a 4-point system. One is this definitely is the place. This is a one. So, for instance, when we're going to talk about the Sea of Galilee here pretty soon,
yeah,
it's a one that that's the Sea of Galilee. There's no debate about whether or not that's the Sea of Galilee. A two would be something that is likely, even probable, but we really can't prove it. Three would be unlikely, but
slim chance.
But yeah, slim chance. And four is forget about it. No way. Mm. So we kind of established that early on. So on the tours, people will be screaming out to the tour guides or to our hosts and say, "Is this a two? Is this a one?" And people look at us weird, wondering what we're talking about, but it's kind of our code language for...
And what was Mount Precipice?
I think Mount Precipice, it's probably somewhere between a two and a three. I don't think we could rule it out because as you look at it, it's another great view of...
We're on the kind of the east side of the Jezreel Valley at that point.
Right, and it certainly is a place that if you wanted to throw somebody off a cliff... In an attempt to end their life, this would be a place to do it. Mm-hmm. As we learn as you go throughout the land, many people want to stake, place a stake in the ground, saying this is it.
Yeah.
For reasons of oftentimes money or what have you. So, and by the way, Nazareth. I actually went into the city of Nazareth the first time I was there, and the city of Nazareth. isn't much to as far as tourism goes. There's a couple things that we could hit there, but the city itself is does not really at all match what we know of the scriptural city, which would have been a small insignificant village.
Right. From there, we headed towards Galilee, saw a little bit of the Sea of Galilee. And ended our day on a hike up Mount Arabel.
Actually, Arabel was the following day.
Because I'm going by my photographs, so
it's
possible that the dating on the camera was off by 8 hours.
Because we got there at the end of the day, and then we went up to Golan Heights, and then we ended Golan Heights early to go to.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. So, well, we'll talk about Arabel anyway.
Yeah, that's fine.
So
it matches it. So Arabel actually is. It's at the end of what is known as the Valley of the Doves. And the Valley of the Doves would have likely been the road or the pass that Jesus would have taken from Nazareth to the Sea of Galilee. Mm-hmm. And Arabel is the most, I would say, picturesque or definitive mountain around Galilee. It has a certain shape to it, which wherever you're at in the lake, usually... unless you're right up against the face of it near Tiberias, you'll be able to tell where you're at orienting yourself towards Arabel.
And it's interesting when you say lake. You know, people hear the Sea of Galilee. You don't really get a perspective of the Sea of Galilee until you're there. I mean, you hear sea and you think Mediterranean Sea. You think Black Sea. You think Caspian Sea. You think this huge body of water. And the Sea of Galilee isn't that big. I mean, at any point along the shore of the lake, you can see the other side.
Right. And especially for us as Minnesotans, we live in the land of 10,000 lakes. So we have lakes that are just as big, if not bigger, than Galilee in Minnesota here. So we get there. And while it is in our lingo, it certainly would be a lake. However, the beauty of Galilee is really unmatched, I think, in the world because of the combination of just natural beauty and spiritual significance.
Right. Yeah. And you mentioned the Valley of the Doves, and there's some significance there when we talk about Jesus being on a boat on the Sea of Galilee and the storms whipping up, and we get a chance to see how that worked with that Valley of the Doves when the wind starts blowing through there and just whipping it up. And you can see while you're sitting on the lake how that would stir the waters up to the point where it would probably be pretty scary.
Right, and it'd be quick. And there's actually several valleys that do empty into the Sea of Galilee, which, again, you get winds, crosswinds starting to connect there. And there certainly you can... it's not a an unknown phenomenon. It's still storms can brew up in an instant in Galilee. So we ended up hiking Arabelle.
Yeah, and which even our tour guide had never done before.
No, our tour guide Aaron, who is been in the land for I think almost 25 years now, and he's never hiked Arabelle, so it was something I wanted to do, but I didn't know really what I was in for either. So we all start, and a couple of the ladies, one of them my pregnant wife, wisely chose to take the bus up.
One side is kind of a rather difficult hike. The other side, there's a road that goes up, and you can just take the bus up to the top.
Exactly. And we literally climbed the face of Arabelle to get up there.
Yeah.
And
yeah, there are like ladder rungs that are secured to the rock face at points where you're literally climbing a ladder.
Right. And I mean, it's one that
and then there was this there was this cliff kind of across the valley where the story goes that the Romans were seeking out the Israelites
that were rebelling.
That were rebelling, and they were hiding in the rock faces, and you can see the caves there. And finally we're somehow grappling them and pulling them out.
Yeah, pulling them out and throwing them down and killing them just by throwing them out and them landing from a fall from the cliff. So, it was for a lot of people, and myself included, that as far as this time, that was the highlight of the trip for me, just because it was a very difficult climb. So,
I did it. I was the last guy up.
We had another guy that was... his wife made it up well before him, and she was worried that he had the big one on the way up. but everybody got up safe and sound. You need to be sure-footed. If somebody had vertigo was not good with heights, I would recommend them not to go now. Mm-hmm. I'll give stern warnings as far as the difficulty of the hike. Yeah. But it is so rewarding, especially the night that we had.
Yeah, it was crystal clear. It was beautiful.
Yeah, and everything was, I mean, and calm. And it just was an ideal night to get up there. And everybody that got up there was kind of on a high because...
It was a great view, and we earned it.
Yeah, exactly. That's something that, weather permitting, the hike will always be there. And getting up to the top is something that will always, because you can always take the bus up to get the view.
My only disappointment was I got up there, and I heard a rumor about an ice cream stand. And by the time I walked down there, they said, no, we're closed.
Right. Well, if we're going to start talking about your food stuff.
We're not going to go there. But in the interest of time, I just want to briefly speak about the biblical significance of Arabelle before we move on to some of the other sites.
Well, Arabelle, the thing that I think is significant about Arabelle is I think it is the best candidate for where the Great Commission was given. At the end of Matthew, Jesus directed all the disciples to go back to Galilee and to a specific mountain. And it doesn't say Arabelle there, but a specific mountain, and he was going to commission them there. And the reason why I think Arabelle fits well is, first off, it provides the most amazing view. And remember, Jesus is commissioning his disciples to go out into all the nations. So you have this apex where Jesus is directing his disciples to go out into all the nations. And then you have the international ways that meet there, and you have the way of the sea that would have often one of the routes would have been to go through that Valley of the Doves. So, it going out to the nations, that was the way of the sea was an international trade route. So, the other thing is there really isn't other mountains around the Sea of Galilee that have that distinction, that definitive nature to them. And again, this would be, for me, this would be, you know, a week two. I think it's a probable. I think it's a good possibility, but there's no way we can prove it because it doesn't say this was Arabelle. It doesn't give any of the dynamics of the things that we would use to authenticate it. But it certainly is one as we look to represent. It's so easy for us to have the while you're on that mount to imagine the Lord commissioning his disciples to go into the nations.
Now that morning, because I got a little out of order here, we headed up to the Golan Heights and to Tel Dan. And Tel Dan is a very interesting site, and it's geographically it's very close to Syria and very close to Lebanon. We could see a city in Lebanon from Tel Dan.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of off in the distance on a hill, but we could see it from where we were. And we could hear some of the shelling that was going on in Syria.
Right.
And we could see some of the aircraft flying between. The story we had heard on the ground there was that very quietly, the Israeli military was going into Syria and getting injured rebels, flying them back and giving them medical care.
Okay.
And so that's what we suspected a lot of these helicopter flights were.
Right.
But just to paint a picture of how close we were, we could kind of hear off in the distance some of the shelling. And
yeah, everything is very, I mean, in Israel, everything is very close. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing how when you go up into the Golan Heights area, especially when you get up north there, how shoulder to shoulder you are with really Israel's enemies.
Yep.
Both Lebanon and Syria are enemies of Israel. On the other hand, you're very safe up in
definitely.
That northern region, because that's where there's a very firm military presence up there guarding the borders. But Tel Dan was I think our first stop.
Beautiful site up there.
Yep. Yep. Just actually the Golan Heights is just a gorgeous site. You have this huge Mount Hermon, mm-hmm. which is a snow-capped mountain at this time of year, and it's pretty amazing to see that that huge mountain there. And then we went to Tel Dan, which again we had a very nice day. This was the same day that we had at Airbell, and Tel Dan it's a nature reserve right now. So we go through, and there's running water coming down from the mountains. And
this is kind of, you know, this is along the Jordan River. It's not
the sources really. It's
right.
pretty much right up near the source of the Jordan River. Mm-hmm. And that's where, the Jordan starts up in Mount Hermon, where the water really filters down from there. And then there are a few streams that join and then start to form the Jordan River. But at Tel Dan, we had, as far as its significance goes, one of the, I think the highlight of Tel Dan is to go up and see Jeroboam's altar.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeroboam was the first king of the northern kingdom of Israel after the kingdom split after Solomon. And it's there that we reflect on really the history of the northern kingdom of Israel and how really they had a legacy of failure. And this altar up in Dan is one that we reflected on as Jeroboam really acted in unbelief as he sought to make up his own religion up. And we still have one of his altars, at least the remains of where the altar would have stood. And
they have a metal frame set up so you can kind of see where, like how big the altar would have been.
And you can see with the horns of the altar there. And yeah, really the foundation is that which really remains.
Sure.
It's a great, it's a beautiful sight and a great one for reflection. And then there's this,
one thing that stuck with me is we'll talk when we get to the south side of Israel about how, the geographic ancient Israel was defined north to south as being from Tel Dan to Beersheba.
Right.
And, so now when you go back and read in the Old Testament, those sites now, you know, I've got it in my mind. I know. Okay. Ancient Israel didn't go any further north than that and didn't go south of Beersheba, which Beersheba geographically, if you think, you know, all the way down to Eilat and the Red Sea, Beersheba is like about half of modern Israel, kind of on the north side of the Negev Desert.
Right. Yeah. And that was the way they spoke of the northern and southern borders was from Dan to Beersheba. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then there was the other site that in Dan, which you have to walk around to, which is Abraham's Gate. And Abraham's Gate, they're still excavating it right now, but that is an ancient 4,000-year-old gate. That the reason it's called Abraham's Gate is that if Abraham did indeed enter into the land from the north, which a lot of people think he did, he certainly would have stopped in this city, in this realm, and entered through the gate that they're excavating. So that's the significance there. They've made some progress in 4 years. It's interesting to be going there every couple of years and seeing how fast, or the fast in quotes, these archaeological digs take. So the other place of significance that we visited up in the Golan Heights was Banias, known back in biblical times as Caesarea Philippi. And Caesarea Philippi was where Peter confessed Christ, where Jesus asked the question, who do you say that I am? And Banias was a grotto that was a really a hotbed of idolatry. Banias, it comes from the ancient word pan, Panias, the Greek god of nature, Pan, who was a half, I think, half goat
and half boy. And,
yep.
And people can picture him in their mind. He had the little flute that he played.
And... Yep. And that's why where we get the pan flute from, mm-hmm. and or the term for pan flute. And it's within that backdrop that Jesus had his disciple confess mm-hmm. him as the
true. Now, do you remember God? They had that little grotto, that little, like, almost like a natural cave there mm-hmm. where there would have been this idol to Pan. Do you remember seeing when we got back and I started posting pictures on Facebook? You know how Facebook will automatically detect pictures and it'll say, who is this?
Right.
Well, I had a picture that had me and my wife standing there. And then, and so it asked me, is this you and is this her? And then it asked me, who's this? And there's like up in the rock, like just the shape of the rock. It's Facebook saw a face there. And I thought, well, that's really weird.
Did you tag Pan?
I think we did. I don't remember. But yeah, I mean, you know, we didn't see it when we were there. Yeah. And I don't know if this was just natural and I kind of, you know, like people seeing images of Mary in their toast in the morning or whatever, but or if it actually was like somebody carved it or whatever. But
no, I didn't see that, but that's interesting. And it certainly was. I mean, that was the place where they would sacrifice and throw mm-hmm. the goat or whatever they were sacrificing in. And if they looked and did not see blood coming out of that, the stream that you see on the other side, would indicate that the sacrifice was accepted by Pan, and if the blood came out, it was a rejection. So very interesting that it's within that dark backdrop that the Lord had Peter confess that you are the Christ, the Son of the living God, not these dead gods, these dead idols that surrounded the area of Caesarea Philippi and the hotbed of the idolatry that was going on with the Pan worship.
Right. So we are about halfway through our time, and we've gotten through maybe 6 sites so far out of 30. So we're going to have to skip over some. We saw Mount of Beatitudes. We saw...
Yep, back to the lake now, or the sea. This is surrounding the sea.
Yep. And that one's going to be kind of familiar to people, at least. It's one of those that you hear about a lot. The Mount of Beatitudes. Well, we saw Chorazin, which was an interesting site. Jesus cursed it.
Yep.
And it sure looks cursed. It's like dark. Everything's like black rock and whatnot. I never knew how to pronounce this one. Tabga. I didn't even really know the significance of that, to be honest. There's a little Catholic site there.
Tabga, just to kind of do a quick run through the northern cities there. Mount of Beatitudes is historically where they think perhaps the Sermon on the Mount took place. Uh-huh. Tabga, it would be the place that they have pinpointed where the restoration of Peter was, where Jesus appeared to them and they cooked fish, and then he asked Peter 3 times if he loved him. Then we keep going, and really down the very northern point of the Sea of Galilee, you have Capernaum.
Mm-hmm. And that's the next one I wanted to get to. Okay. Capernaum is a really neat site.
Yeah.
And there's a lot there, and there's the Catholics have a church there.
Spaceship, some people
call it. It kind of looks like a flying saucer with like on 4 posts. But that sits over the top of an ancient Byzantine church, which in turn sits on top of what's believed to be Peter's mother-in-law's house.
Right, because the reason why they think this was a dwelling of one of, seemingly maybe one of the relatives of the disciples that lived here, of course, they gravitate towards Peter first because of how...
significant
he is, but there's evidence, there's imagery and evidences of a first century dwelling that perhaps was even a church, a gathering place. And it's certainly something that I think is gets close to a high two or a one in regards to, I think there's a very high probability that, you know, certainly we know this is Capernaum.
Yeah.
And the other interesting thing is there's a synagogue there, and now the ruins of the synagogue that are there, the stones that are there from the synagogue that dates to about the 3rd century, but it's built on the foundation of the synagogue that would have been around, and you see that foundation during the time of Jesus. And
this would have been the one where they removed the roof and lowered the lame man down,
yep,
so Jesus could heal him.
And this was Jesus' hometown. In fact, it declares in Matthew that he left Nazareth behind and went to dwell in Capernaum. Mm-hmm. And so in Capernaum, it's a beautiful site, right on the sea.
Yep.
And then we head down to En Gev,
which is a kibbutz.
It's a kibbutz. I think it's, if not the first, one of the first kibbutzes. I don't even know if kibbutzes is a term. I don't know.
Kibbutzim, probably.
Yeah, pluralized kibbutz. But it's again a beautiful place, and this is where we have a meal there, which is at St. Peter's Fish,
where we had pizza.
Yeah, you had pizza. Most of the deep fry tilapia, and it's actually very good. I'm not a fish person, but I enjoy that. And then we go on a boat ride across the Sea of Galilee, which this is nice. The kibbutz that we stay in, it actually, the boat goes to and
right back to our
kibbutz. So we actually,
and as we got off the book, then we go into the museum for the Jesus boat.
Right. There's a boat that they uncovered that is housed at the kibbutz that we stay at, which is they found in the lake itself a boat that dates back to the 1st century. So, of course, they call it the Jesus boat because they found a boat. Because
he was possibly alive when that boat was
in
use.
Right, right. So they were able to preserve most of it, and so it's a very interesting thing to see. They have that on display, and that's Galilee. And we took a night trip into Tiberias after we get back from our touring. Usually in the nights, a lot of people are still, like you said, you're up enough to be able to go perhaps not on for a night out of town, but maybe not to keep studying, so to speak. So. Yeah. Then we woke up the next morning and started heading our way down the Jordan after some baptisms, which that's where we do our baptisms, is at where the Jordan starts going. It's called the Yarnet. The Jordan starts to weave its way down the Jordan Valley. It empties out from the bottom of the Sea of Galilee.
Yep. Yeah. So we had 3 baptisms there in our group out of 17, which was kind of a neat experience.
Yep.
And then we head down to
Beit Shan. Yeah, potato, potato. Well, most of these sites, we have 10
multiple,
different
pronunciations. Not just pronunciations, I got different spellings.
Right, right.
We're transliterating from Hebrew.
So. Exactly. So Beit Shan is an amazing archaeological site. It's actually a city that was destroyed in, I think, the 7th or 8th century. And so there's amazing Roman ruins there to explore. And it's a huge site. It's probably the biggest archaeological site that we are in Israel, as far as that has been unearthed. The biblical significance of Beit Shan, at least this is what it's known for the most biblically, is this is where, after Saul and Jonathan, were killed, they were nailed to the walls of Beit Shan. So it's kind of it has a bloody history, but it's very interesting archaeological place to go. It's one that actually when you go up there, there's this huge tell or hill, and that you can walk up, and there are there's artifacts that go way, way back. In fact, they found ancient Egyptian artifacts mm-hmm. up on that tell. So it's a very fascinating archaeological site. Yeah. But that's just, we're starting to make our way down the Jordan Valley. Now, this is the Rift Valley, and this trip is amazing as you go from Galilee, and it's in one day you go from Galilee down to the Dead Sea, and you watch the land turn from a lush green to a desolate desert.
Yeah, it really is fascinating. And from Beth Shan, you know, we're about halfway to Qumran, which is our next stop. We stop in Qumran. You know, I have been to Israel before, but I spent the majority of my time at Qumran doing a dig, and that's why I loved this trip so much, because I got a chance to actually see the land and go see sites and stuff. But I spent 2 weeks at Qumran. There really isn't a lot to see there. It's a small city or really a village. There's mm-hmm. still a lot of ruins there, and of course you see some of the caves, and there's a visitor center there and whatnot. But it's definitely a must see. But you don't spend a lot of time in Qumran.
No, it's very. There's very interesting history, both recent history and ancient history in Qumran, though, because what most would consider the most important archaeological find in the 20th century happened in Qumran, which is the discovery of the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Right.
And so that's recent history. They found them there, but the Dead Sea Scrolls date back to before Christ. Mm-hmm. So it's to have that ancient of scrolls and to have found those, it's amazing. And it's a neat sight. You can really see how this community lived, this Qumran community. And at this point, you're
below sea level.
You're below sea level,
which is interesting itself, because you know when I was there, I got there and you're out in the sun is just intense. But first day there on my dig back in 2002, I pull out my big container of sunscreen, and I'm told right away, put that away. You don't need it,
right?
Because you're so far below sea level. I ended up out in the sun for 2 weeks straight, and I went home whiter than I was when I left. Right.
No, it's amazing. And that's the other amazing thing about Israel. Israel, there's no place like it on earth just because of the elevation changes, the environment that you're in from one place to the other. It can change in just a short drive. So you have Qumran right near the Dead Sea now. So you go down to the Dead Sea, and again, the Dead Sea, there's nothing like the Dead Sea in the world. Yeah, there's the Great Salt Lake, but there's some pretty big differences between the Dead Sea and the Great Salt Lake.
Yeah. From there, that was kind of our last site of the day, if I remember correctly.
Right, and
we stayed on the south side of the Dead Sea.
Yeah, and that's really a nice break, because we've been going, and mm-hmm. usually I wind it back just a little bit during this period, because the Dead Sea is a great place of relaxation. You go in and
a lot of resorts down there.
Tons of resorts. And it's a very just beautiful, relaxing place. You're looking out over the Dead Sea to the mountains of Moab.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still a very spectacular views. And you're in the midst of these huge, desert mountains as you're down there.
Yeah. So we get up the next morning and we go to Beersheba.
Yep.
And we see the southern, as we mentioned before, the southernmost point of ancient Israel.
Right, Beersheba. And that's a city that goes all the way back to the time of Abraham. So we went to ancient Beersheba, that's Tel Beersheba, whereas you can see the modern-day Beersheba or Beersheba down just about a mile or two away. But Abraham and the kingdoms of David, Beersheba was always a very prominent place. So very, very interesting place to visit. And then we went on an amazing hike. We went down the Valley of Zin, and it was a beautiful, amazing hike. Now this is down near where the ancient Israelites would have been wandering for a time of their 40 years. Of course, they made their way around because they were wandering. But this is down near Kadesh Barnea, and the hike is another beautiful desert hike. There is this one wasn't quite as tough as Erbil, but it is a tough hike. This is another one of the...
Well, there is a portion where you're kind of going up a cliff face.
Right.
Again. And it's another where those who maybe would have had a tougher time could have taken the bus around. You would have missed the whole site, but
Right. And it wasn't that tough.
That one had stairs as opposed to like metal ladders
and rockets. Right. And bars and so it was, but it was a very it still was a hike.
Yeah.
But it was just beautiful and really a great place to. There was also a stream running through it. Mm-hmm. A beautiful place to again consider the wilderness wanderings and those dynamics.
There's some connection there to David as well.
Right. I think that's just, again, when he was, in a sense, a fugitive or a vagabond throughout the land of Israel. Yeah, so...
Trying to keep away from Saul.
Right. The Valley of Zin and the wilderness of Zin.
Sure.
And that's Z-I-N.
Yeah.
Is how that's what we're... What, the word we're saying.
Mm-hmm. And then a big one that is a must-see is Masada. We went to Masada.
Right. Masada is pretty much everybody that goes to Israel should see Masada. There's two ways to get up Masada. That's another tough climb.
Yep. I did the cable car.
Yep, and I did the cable car too because we had filming to do. That's the only reason. But yeah, I've made that hike before. It is a hike. That's another if you like hiking, this is a place where you can have some of the most amazing hikes in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But there's, for those that want to take the trip and aren't able to make that, you're still able to see the sights without, because even in the wilderness of Zin, even if you went around, you still were able to go and look over and see the valley and the canyon. You just weren't able to go down and really experience it.
Yep.
But yeah, Masada is amazing. Again, Herod the Great, this is a creation of his. This was one of his fortresses. It is a huge, like, mesa. Yep. And you go up on top there, and it is an archaeological treasure. And not only that, you have amazing views of the Judean.
And you can see there how it would be extremely defensible.
Right.
To go up there, and that's why Herod built that. He was very paranoid. And he could go up there and... there were the walls of the city were right at the cliff edge, so it would have been extremely easy to defend it.
Right, and that's actually the Romans, the most powerful army in the world at the time. This is about 70 plus years after Herod had died. The last remnants of the Jewish revolt had taken house in Masada, and the Roman armies had just such a hard time breaching the fortress, and the story is amazing how they did it. They built a huge ramp, and you're able to still see that ramp that they built to be able to get up there. And ultimately, they, as the story goes, they got up there, and everybody had committed suicide,
mm-hmm.
except for perhaps...
There was, I believe, two women and three children.
Perhaps, survived. A few. So, It's a sad story. It's a harrowing
story. And as you're at Masada, there was some discussion among our group about the view and what you see from Masada. And now our guide would say, this is an amazing natural area here.
Right.
But some of the talk was that there's evidence that the base of Masada is actually the ancient site of Gomorrah.
Right.
And as you look, you can kind of see how that case is built. And we really wanted, some of us really wanted to go walk around in there because apparently there's some stuff that
like sulfur
balls and whatnot that is even more compelling. And it just looks like there's ash and whatnot. We really wanted to check it out and see, are these stories correct? And for whatever reason, we loved our tour guide, and Aaron was great everywhere else. But for some reason on that site, he just was like, wanted to put that one to bed right away. He's like, oh, look at all great this natural. It kind of looks like the Badlands when you're looking at it from a distance.
Yeah, a Badlands on steroids.
Yeah.
Really. And actually, in our next trip, we plan on having an extra day or two down in the southern wilderness, which we will actually be able to head down near the King Solomon's mine, or the spice mines, the spice route, the mines down there,
mm-hmm.
and furthermore, look at there's a model of the tabernacle, a life size model of the tabernacle in the deep south, and then there's the Mitzpeh Ramon crater. All of those we're looking to hit, so probably an extra day or day and a half down south. And I'm looking forward to it because the South is amazing in as far as its archaeology.
I really hope on a future trip to make it a point to walk around, even if it's just for, you know, half hour or something, just to walk around and see, you know, if there's anything to this case for Gomorrah.
I don't think that would be an issue. I don't think they're too. I mean, the thing is
there's just kind of a road that drives through there as you get.
I think you
to
could
and
probably
from Masada, and you probably walk. Have to park at the side of the road and walk back there.
But we'll let you take a side tour over there.
Yeah,
you know.
So
yeah, it's and we'll probably also see some of the other suggested places for Sodom.
Sure,
you know.
And then there was En Gedi, and we didn't get to see En Gedi much because there was a very light sprinkle there. But the people at the park were afraid that it doesn't take, because that is such a harsh desert, it doesn't take very much water to cause flash floodings.
Yeah,
so we got a little bit back, and they said you can't go any further because of this light sprinkle. They were afraid that it could be deadly.
Right, so we saw, I mean, we did get to see En Gedi. We got to see some of the falls. We got to see the ibex that roam mm-hmm. there. I've been deep into En Gedi all the way back to David's Waterfall twice, and it is a great hike, but yeah, this was one of the few days that they got any type of precipitation, and when that does happen, in fact, there was a video that came out that went viral about a river just spraying
that was
to life.
That was at Zin.
Right.
And it was after we were there.
Exactly. But so that kind of demonstrated how quickly this really can happen. So you definitely don't want to
mess around with
it. No, and our tour guide certainly wasn't shy about telling us about people who died doing these things. That's why we shouldn't go do it.
Yeah, the interesting was the Russian woman who dove into the Dead Sea.
Yeah.
And
didn't come out.
And didn't come out. The lifeguard said, she's not coming out.
Yeah. And she didn't.
She did.
No. And we're not laughing because she died.
We're laughing at the story and how he told it.
The way he told it, yes.
Yeah. Aaron is a Kiwi, so he's got a little bit of that down under accent. And,
yeah, it's a very interesting Jewish-New Zealand
blend,
mix,
yeah.
Yes.
But he's a believer.
He's wonderful. And by the way, we have him booked for our next tour in February of 16.
Yeah. After En Gedi, the next morning we headed up towards Jerusalem. On our way, we stopped at what's called the Genesis Experience, and it's kind of an interesting. You go in and you ride some camels, and a guy dressed up like Abraham kind of explains
not really dressed up as Abraham. I don't know if Abraham wore jeans.
Yeah, that's true. He had the top, the shirt like Abraham,
right?
But and then we just got to enjoy the view as you come into Jerusalem, and it's really an amazing view.
Well, that's what I told you about how the view,
everybody's piled on the left side of the bus as you're
right.
coming in.
The view of the Valley of Armageddon is one, or the Jezreel Valley is one that takes your breath away. And whenever you see Jerusalem from coming out of that tunnel and you see the Temple Mount and the city, it's hard to be stoic at that time.
Next morning we get up and we head to Bet Shemesh.
Bet Shemesh, yes.
Bet Shemesh.
And that was, so we, it, you, in and around Jerusalem, that's one thing to learn.
Which is just like, as we're there, it's like a grassy hill out in the middle of nowhere.
Right. And the thing is you go to these places around Jerusalem, there's so many places that aren't far from Jerusalem, like Bethlehem is really close to Jerusalem. And so even though we're in Jerusalem, we're going and seeing places that are surrounding Jerusalem. And Bet Shemesh was one of them. And this is where the region where, if you recall, when the Philistines took the ark and that didn't go well for them, mm-hmm. and they put it on some cows and led it back. This is where the ark ultimately, in this region where it came to and ultimately started to rest. So we kind of we reflected on some of those dynamics of that story, and actually it's very, very pretty. And this region too,
especially that time of year. It's February. It's just green and lush, and
you
know, everything's in bloom. And
things, there's some really pretty red flowers that were mm-hmm. that were sprouting up. So, and then in that region as well is the Valley of Elah, which is where David and Goliath. And we didn't spend that much time there, but we just stopped and took a look. And
you literally pull over on the side of the road.
Yeah.
Step out of the bus and they kind of talk about the area.
Some people
it's just a couple roads that come together. It's just a random intersection, it seems.
Right.
And you see the power lines going through and whatnot, and people pick up rocks
and move on.
And, you know, my wife brought some back for the kids and say, you know, one of these might possibly have killed Goliath. And
yeah. Or, you know, yeah, exactly. So you might have it.
Yeah.
Throw it on eBay.
The next thing I have on there, we must have headed up from there to Herodion.
Yep.
And Herodion is a site I think a lot of us had a hard time taking in.
Yeah, interesting thing is we...
Our mind wasn't on the site at this point.
Right. As we were going, we were driving by one of the fences that divide the territories. And I was sitting right up front, and I saw a Palestinian pop up and throw a rock at our bus, and it was a perfect. I mean, it was a big rock, and it hit the windshield and cracked the windshield. The windshield didn't shatter, but it was a huge indentation and crack, and really shook up our host or our tour guide. And some other people on the bus were a little shaken up. We weren't in any danger anymore. But it was something that it was very interesting because then we went to the Herodion and took it in. By the way, that was another place where that Herod had made. It's where Herod's tomb was, where he would have been buried. But then we we went to the police station to file a police report, and that was. Officially
a terrorist attack.
A terrorist attack. And it was...
And we saw some of the signs there, too. You talk about the fence that divides the territories. Right. There are big signs that are red with white letters that talk about how no one's allowed in there, and that, you know, Jews are certainly not allowed in there, and your life is in your own hands if you enter.
And that's the one thing is that, you know, again, as this is, you know, this next trip will be the fourth time I'm there. Third time I'm leading a tour, you learn where and where, you know, where to go and where not to go. And even though this, you know, in Aaron's 20 years in doing this, he never had anything like this happen in a tour.
He said that was the fourth time that he'd gotten hit by a rock on a vehicle.
Right.
But it was the first time as a tour guy.
Right. And I think, again, I think as I go forth, we just won't be driving next to. And again, I didn't even know that we were going to be going that route that was between the driver and the guide. But in fact, I'm sure after this happened, you know, it's not that these things are secret. The rest of the tour buses are probably saying, you know what, let's steer clear of those areas. So as Andy has said, it wasn't anything that shook me up too much because
you were probably the least shaken up of anybody.
I was more the Lord graciously protected us. I was more concerned about, you know, other people being shaken up about it. And the thing is really after that was done, the nice thing is, you know, got forgotten about and everybody was continue.
Well, it did affect at least Herodion.
Right, exactly.
Our minds were not there.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like if you're walking New York and somebody jumps out with a knife and robs you, takes your wallet, you know, like you're fine, you're out your wallet, but you know, overall, that's probably going to be the only thing you're going to think about for the rest of the day.
Right.
As well as the case for us. So we saw Herodion and then we went into Jerusalem and we got to see a little bit of the old city. We got our first introduction of the old city, walking in, seeing the Western Wall and, which, by the way, is absolutely gorgeous at night when they light that up. It's just such a beautiful thing. And I had made a point. I really wanted to get down there one evening and get some good pictures. Mm-hmm. It's something that one of the few things I got to do 12 years ago, and I wanted to do that again because I had a digital camera 12 years ago, but it was like
it's a little different.
It's like
technology.
Worse than the average webcam
right. These
days. It was. And so I wanted it. Now I've got a nice camera. I wanted to do it.
Well, that's the one thing about Israel is when you do go, make sure you bring a good camera because you want to. The pictures never do it justice.
No.
It isn't even close, but it still gives a picture. It still gives a shot, and it is the beautiful. It is called the beautiful land for a reason.
Yep. So next day we see, of course, the Mount of Olives. Great sight to see. another must-see.
Yeah, amazing site. That's where so many things have happened in salvation history. That is where the Lord gave, that's where our Lord ascended. Mm-hmm. That's where he marched over into Jerusalem. It's where David fled from Absalom. It's where the Lord is going to, it says at the end of the age, he's going to come and set his feet on the Mount of Olives.
Yep.
And so that's the amazing thing about this land is you have this amazing rich past, this dynamic present, and then you have a future that has already been prophesied. So when you're standing on the Mount of Olives, it's surreal because you know momentous events are going to happen on this mount once again.
The Lord's not done with it.
Right.
Garden of the Gethsemane, which of course you see it's kind of down at the bottom of the Mount of Olives.
Foot of the Mount of Olives, yep. And so that's in near the Kidron Valley, which is the valley that really is between the Mount of Olives and Mount Moriah and Mount Zion.
Mm-hmm. And then I've got Western Wall Tunnels. Did we see that same day?
I can't remember. But
that was the next thing on my pictures.
It might have been. The Western Wall Tunnels, you actually go underneath on you go underground, basically.
Yeah, you're just on the outside, underground, but outside of the Temple Mount.
Right, and so you're walking. Actually, it's a place for where a lot of Jewish women go to pray, and so they're actually at that wall underground praying. If the Dome of the Rock is over the place of the ancient temple, that's where they would say you can get. That's the closest you could get to where the Holy of Holies would have been.
Okay,
and a lot of them would point that out, but it's amazing. You're basically down on the street, that first century street down there, where the Lord and the apostles would have walked.
And you can see the Herodian stones that would have been on the retaining wall holding up the Temple Mount during the time of Christ.
And then that huge stone that was the title for it. It slips my mind right now, but there's this amazing stone that was cut out
humongous
by Herod, and you see it, and it's, I mean,
I think they said it was big enough that modern construction equipment wouldn't be able to lift it.
Right. It's amazing, you know, and this, again, the temple, Herod was the one that, even though the temple was reconstructed after the return, it wasn't really until Herod came where it really got fortified and built up, and Josephus and some other ancient sources go into this. So Herod had to do with, some of the big Herodian sites. You have Caesarea Maritima, you have the Herodian, you have Masada, and then you have the Temple Mount.
Yeah. So as we come out of those tunnels, we end up near the Pool of Bethesda. From which point we walk the Via della Rosa to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre.
Right.
And then we were able to head over and actually get to up on the Temple Mount.
Yeah, and that's always an experience. There's every single time I've been up on the Temple Mount, which is three times now, mm-hmm. Something different has happened. It's never a place that is calm. There is a little bit of a...
There's a little tension there.
Dark tension up there. The first time I was up there, I had some people upset with me because I was taking a picture where I wasn't supposed to be taking a picture.
We were told we were filming our documentary up there, and we were told that we couldn't be doing that.
Right.
And for all we know, that this guy had no authority, or he was just a random guy off the street, so we just ignored him.
Yeah, we just ignored him. And the last time, not this last time, but the time before we went, an individual came up and started really berating Aaron, basically saying he shouldn't be up here. This is
because he's ethnically Jewish.
Right, right. And then this last time we had that, and then we had the kids rock fighting, which we're wondering if that was just kind of a setup.
Well, I saw what was going on. I was paying attention.
Okay.
And we were leaving the Temple Mount, and you enter the Temple Mount kind of on the southwest corner,
right?
But you leave on the north, kind of in the middle of the north part of the Temple Mount, out a normal gate. And as we are all walking towards there, we have like, what do we have, an hour, hour and a half up there?
Yeah.
And that's what non-Muslims are allowed. It's about an hour up there. And then time's up, and it's time to leave. And we're all just kind of casually heading out. And I was paying attention. There was two groups of kids. There must have been maybe three or four kids on each group. And they were just fighting with each other, and they were throwing rocks back and forth between the two of them.
Yeah.
And we're walking closer and closer because we got to walk between where they're fighting in order to get out the gate. And I'm just kind of assuming, well, these kids are going to have to quit sooner or later.
Yeah.
But a lot of people in our group weren't paying attention.
Yeah.
And they still have the Herodian on their mind.
Right.
And they thought maybe that they were coming after us.
Right, right.
And I was never worried about that because I saw the whole time.
Right.
It's just these kids just...
Well, even some of the other Arab people on the Temple Mount were getting after them. You know, and even Aaron,
well, Aaron, our tour guide, starts shouting at this Muslim guy that you need to take care of your kids.
So, that kind of, there was a couple people that even though there wasn't any, I didn't sense any immediate danger there. It was something, again, just kind of, the flashbacks.
Yeah.
So to speak.
Well, it was that Herodian experience, I think, got people a little more on edge.
Yeah.
And there is that tension that you mentioned.
Yeah.
It's just there. Yeah, I mean, when you're walking in, you see the Israeli police sitting there with riot gear ready.
Right.
Because anything can happen in a moment.
Yeah. Have your exit plan ready when you go up to the Temple Mount.
So, and then something that you didn't join us on, but when we kind of got to the end of our tour that day and we had a bit of free time left, some of us went on a wall walk that was pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. We walked along. There's two different wall walks you can do. We did one that goes along the north. And
well, I actually did go on the north one with you guys. I didn't go on the south one.
Okay, we didn't go on the south.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, so you were with us. That was an interesting thing, and it's not a big sight to see. It's a self-guided tour. You basically pay for a ticket to
walk around the half of the old city up from an aerial view.
But it's an interesting view to see, and...
I
wouldn't, if I were leading a tour, I wouldn't lead a group on that, but I would recommend
doing it in the evenings.
In your free time, that's a kind of a neat thing.
Yeah, it's definitely a perfect thing to do in the evening after, because actually that's the nicest time to go up there. It's beautiful when the sun is setting. You get an amazing view of the
mountains. It's a little bit cooler part of the day. Yep. It's quieter. People are kind of, the people who live in the city are just kind of making dinner and kind of settling down. And
it's a great time. Mm-hmm.
Then the next morning we got up and we went to the City of David.
Yes.
And that's a neat site too. And the City of David, you know, I never really put together what that was all about.
Right.
I didn't realize that David's city was separate from the old city of Jerusalem.
Right, the north. Yeah, it's really on Zion. Mm-hmm. It's the Mount Zion. Really, you have these three big mountains in Jerusalem. That everything kind of revolves around the Mount of Olives, then Mount Zion, which mm-hmm. is to the south, and then Mount Moriah, which is to the north of Mount Zion. So, and then the Kindred Valley runs between the Mount of Olives and Mount Moriah and Mount Zion. So, Mount Zion is there's amazing things there. They had a really good multimedia presentation. Then you go down into the tunnel, Hezekiah's tunnel. And there's two tunnels you can go in. One is an old Canaanite tunnel, and the other one is Hezekiah's tunnel. And this is the tunnel that we read about in the Old Testament that Hezekiah had dug under his kingship, and you can still walk through it. And it's not.
We did the Canaanite tunnel.
Yeah, and
I just got there that day, and I didn't feel like. Walking up knee deep in water.
Well, and sometimes it can even get beyond knee deep. So, and if you are at all, I mean, it's a claustrophobic nightmare because it's pitch black and you are tight walking through this tunnel. And I mean, it takes a while to get through, but yeah, it's definitely experience. If that's the type of, if you like that type of stuff, the adventurous type of things.
We will do it next time.
I know we will.
And you weren't there that time. You had been lecturing us on staying hydrated, but not practicing what you preached.
I forgot to drink water the day before, so I was recovering in my hotel room. And then, was a good day for me to miss because we had that, and I had experienced that, and the tour really didn't need me there. And then you guys went to the Yad Vashem, the Holocaust Museum.
The Hezekiah's Tunnel dumps out on the Pool of Siloam.
Right.
And then from there, we went up to Yeah, we went to Yad Vashem,
which is the Holocaust Museum, which everybody that hasn't been to Israel, you need to go there at least once.
Yeah.
I thought it's very well done. It's not overly, I mean, I've seen some horrible pictures of the Holocaust, and so I mean, they don't go for shock value here, even though they don't sugarcoat it either.
No, but it's let's not forget.
It's very well done. Everybody that goes to the land, I, as a tour guide, almost require people that haven't gone, that haven't seen the Yad Vashem, they need to go see it.
Right.
It's an option if you've gone there the second time. Sometimes these museums, there's an option, you know, if you want to go out and do things on your own, you're not required to go to a museum that you just, you know, it's when you're in the Jerusalem area, there's more of an option to break off, where you can't really do that in Galilee or in the South or the Dead Sea.
Right. And then we also saw the Israel Museum.
Yep.
And then is it the Shrine of the Book?
Right.
Where the Dead Sea Scrolls are actually kept.
Mm-hmm.
That was an interesting one for us because my wife and I were there. And, you know, I went over there with you to work on this documentary. So I was really focused on this really interesting model of the ancient city of Jerusalem there. And trying to make sure, because you weren't with, I wanted to make sure we got the shots that we wanted. And getting that at every angle we could.
Yeah.
And then we went into the Shrine of the Book and walked through that and saw the thing. Didn't even notice that there was this other museum over there.
Now, the first time I went, it was the same experience. The first time, all I saw was the model and the Shrine of the Book. Mm-hmm. The second time I went, they said, oh, the museum's over here. So we actually did go into the museum the second time I went, and that's a place you could spend a whole day.
The pictures I saw that our group had were very interesting.
Yeah, there's in fact a lot of the things that you would see throughout the land at say an ancient synagogue or what have you are actually reconstructions that they've put there, and they've put the authentic one in the Israeli Museum. Mm-hmm. Like this, for instance, the Seat of Moses that is in Chorazin.
Yeah.
You know, that sits there, but that isn't the actual one that they found there. That is actually in the Israeli Museum.
Yeah. And then we finish our tour with this perfect site to finish our tour. And we go to the Garden Tomb and Gordon's Calvary.
Right.
And it was a wonderful experience there as a group. We go there and we have communion together. We get to see a site where, you know, we would probably put a high two on
at least Golgotha. Yeah.
On our scale, you know, or even the tomb, I think.
The tomb.
I would personally say that's a two. You know?
Yeah, the tomb is, you could go either way. I mean, there's some...
They don't present it like that.
They don't.
They really downplay, you know, that this is a period tomb, and it's a likely candidate, but they don't push it as like... It's not like you go to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, and the Catholics will tell you this is where it was.
Right, and that's, again, you go back to... I do think... And as we've said before, you don't have to, for that site, it's not all or nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, for instance, that could be, when you look at that stone outcropping, that could be the place of the skull, while the tomb is not the actual tomb, or vice versa. The one thing that I have read, and again, I'm not an archaeologist, that some people have dated that tomb to 600 BC. And if that's the case, it's hard to make that turn into a tomb that is, remember, a new tomb. But again, we all know how reliable sometimes dating methods are. So it's definitely...
There's a lot of this very discussion that goes on.
Yeah, yeah. And that's part of the joy of Israel is it is an adventure. It is. And being with...
And people research this ahead of time. And so they start picking their archaeologists and their experts and making their case for why, well, that can't be right, and it's got to be this one over here. And
Right. And it's it is. It's just fascinating to go on this tour with, and again, it's so refreshing to be around, you know, Christ-loving and honoring and Bible-loving people that are just, you know, enraptured
That's a part of the trip that you can't really... communicate. You got to experience the being there with fellow believers,
right?
That you're spending 2 weeks with and getting a chance to know and really know enjoying them, your time
and
with.
Really just sharing this experience, this unforgettable experience with, mm-hmm. And learning more about your common Savior and his work and who he is and what he has done within this context. That's what will that whole package is what causes pretty much everybody that comes back from the land to say this is something that I'll never forget and I want to go again.
Yeah. Well, that's the end of our list, and we are going long. I got a few more minutes that I want to talk before we close, but I had two sites that we saw. Our last day in Jerusalem is a free day, so you kind of leave us to just go and see things that you didn't get to see. Maybe go spend your day in the market. There's a lot of bartering going on in the old city,
right?
Buying knickknacks and whatnot. And one thing that a few of us did that was enjoyable was that in my previous trip, I broke away from Qumran for it was a Friday night, Saturday, and we went to Jerusalem. So I got to see a little bit of the old city. And we stayed at the YMCA Hotel, which is across the street from the King David Hotel, which is pretty significant, at least in modern Israel, a significant site. And so I took them back there because the YMCA has a tower that you can go up that has a pretty incredible view up there of both. It's just outside of the old city, so you get to see the old city, you can see the new city. It's a really spectacular view up there, and it's worth the time to go check that out. And again, not something that if I was a tour leader, I wouldn't book that, but in your free time, if you get there.
And there's quite a bit of free time in Jerusalem. The thing is we get done with our sites usually by 4, mm-hmm. and Jerusalem, I mean, we always go out as a group. Yep. Or as you know, either as a big group or with other people. I mean, you can go down into the old city. Shops are open. We went down to Ben Yehuda yep. Street quite often. That's more of the kind of the
a little new, more modern,
a little more modern. And but it's all. And then were you going to talk about the Citadel or the?
That was the last site. Was yep. the David Citadel was something that we saw, and that also was that's something I would book as a tour leader. I think that's another site that is worth the time to go in there. There's a lot of history there. It's kind of both a museum and a site. So you walk through different rooms and they give you kind of some of the Canaanite history, pre-Israelites history, and they walk you all the way through to the biblical times and whatnot. And well, there's a lot there.
We definitely have time in Jerusalem. I mean, the thing is there's definitely, you know, there's... because everything's so compact, you have time for that type of thing.
Yeah,
so.
And that's one of the nice things about getting done when we do is you know, we would always finish up in the old city, so you kind of, and then our hotel is just maybe
it's walking distance
half mile up from the old city, you walk yep. up. So most people would stick around and go see something, get something to eat
yep.
and whatnot.
But, yep, so we are, both Andy and I are on the board of Mount Moriah, the Mount Moriah Foundation. I'm the director, and we our goal is to bring the faithful to the land and bring the land to the faithful. So, some of the ways we're doing that, we're in the midst of this documentary. It's trying to capture the teaching of the Holy Land along with the story of salvation history and the land of Israel is at the backdrop. This is kind of the way that we're trying to bring the land and the teaching of the trip back to people that aren't able to make the trip. But every 2 years, we're looking to be taking trips to the Holy Land, to Israel. And so we are already have...
And if there's interest, we might go more often. There's five right. of us on the board, so...
Right,
you know, it's possible that you typically lead them, but
right, and that it's and the thing is if it's going to be every, I mean, we may have to start going because we don't want to start making larger trips.
We don't want
trips.
Bigger tours, so
we'll do more tours before we do bigger tours.
Right,
so as long as the Lord allows, and as long as the situation, as everybody knows, that situation over there is fluid. But even during this time where this is, we're in August of 2014 now, and there's still a lot of upheaval, there's still tours going on over there. Yeah. And the contacts that I have over there, they're still running their tours. It's
well, and then things seem to be kind of simmering down right
now. A little
now.
Bit. And But of course, we have people, you know, not only over here that are running things over here, but even more importantly over there, mm-hmm. that aren't going to put people in unnecessary harm's way. Right. So, you know, there's risk on every single trip you take anywhere. And for the most part, Israel is one of the safest places you can go, as long as you know
where to go and when to go places.
It's a privilege to be able to go over there and to share these amazing experiences with people and see how it revolutionizes their life and their walk with Christ.
We talked a little bit about the documentary, which, as you mentioned, if we can't bring the people to the land, we want to bring the land to the people.
Right.
And that's partly what this Jerusalem's King is about, this documentary. And this is episode number 76, so as you're kind of listening up, as we're wrapping up here, if you're near a computer and want to check out echoesaway.com/76, we'll put, at least for now, we'll put a trailer up there, and you can see kind of what we're working on. You could talk a little bit more about what that is that we're working on.
Yeah, the movie.
Yeah,
yeah. It's called Jerusalem's King, and we actually did quite a bit of filming while we were over there on the trip that we were just speaking of, and but that's only just that's part of the backdrop of this film, which is really taking the viewer from Eden to New Jerusalem. And so it's going to have, you're going to be able to see the land, walk through the land of promise. You're going to see all of these sites in living color. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be in the midst of the telling of the story of redemption. So we have certain reenactments throughout this. We have effect shots that we have working on. It's a distinct movie. I've dubbed it a dramatic documentary. Mm-hmm. It's a living documentary, as we're going to see this thread of Jerusalem and her king that's really starts in Genesis. There's the seeds of these promises that we see in Genesis, and we're going to follow the scriptures through looking through the land and where these things were promised and where they took place as we look forward to the New Jerusalem.
Yeah.
We are probably over the halfway point now in production. We still got quite a bit left.
And this is an interesting process for me, because you brought me over there to help you film, and I've been kind of helping a little bit here and there with some of the scenes and some of the video editing work and whatnot. But this film is still mostly in your head.
Yeah, I know.
And so I a little bit is revealed to me as we go. You know, I still like to think that I maybe worked on it the most, you know, second only to you.
Oh yeah, you're but, right there. And
I don't really, you know, I'm just kind of a little bit at a time seeing what is going on and how it's unraveling and stuff. But I'm really pleasantly surprised and sometimes amazed at the quality of what we're doing. It's coming together
amazing. And so many talented people are coming along.
On a shoestring budget.
So if, for those that are listening, keep us in prayer.
It's not even the shoestring. It's that little plastic thing on the end of your shoestring. Yep, yep.
So the Lord has been so gracious in providing materials and people with talent.
Yeah.
And things are coming along very nicely. And I'm sure we'll be talking about this in further detail in the future.
So the release is next year.
Next year.
We don't have a firm date, but it'll be early part of the year.
Early part of the year. Yep.
And like I said, I'll put the trailer up, and you can
see. And that's just a little teaser. That's very. It's just not even barely a taste. It's just some of the. Yeah. The full trailer will probably be out in October.
It's got some of that that quality that I've been seeing come together, and you know, that some of that pleasant surprise you'll see in that trailer.
We're all excited, and it's just the most exciting thing is to be able to share the work the message of Christ in a form that is that could really reach a lot of people.
Yeah. So as we get closer to 2016 in February, when we're going to do this next tour, we'll have more information. I'll definitely have on the podcast as well.
Right. After the turn of the year in 2015, that's when we'll probably have our first meeting, because we really start to a year out, we will start the heavy lifting, getting people signed up, and getting our itinerary nailed down, our hotels, all these things. A year of planning, it really does take a year of planning to get it done.
You know, listeners to Echo Zoe are not only welcome, but encouraged to join us on this trip if you would like to come. And again, I don't know if I'm going yet. I would like to go, but Ryan for sure is going.
As the Lord wills.
The Lord wills. You know, listeners are really global to the podcast, and the chances that you're listening to this and you're in the Twin Cities Metro and will be able to come physically to meetings are slim, but you're still very welcome to come, and we'll make sure to provide the information that you'll need.
Right. People can connect from anywhere. It's just the way I'm able to set this up is with what's called a land only package, which means that you'd go through us to pay for the land, and then you'd secure your own airfare. And then we would find suitable ways to get you to the you know, really our first hotel. Mm-hmm. So you can meet up with the tour and the people that we work with over in Israel, the touring companies and the ministries that we work with over there certainly deal with that type of thing on a consistent basis. Sure.
And price wise, probably similar to what we had.
Yeah,
We had the airfare included out of the out of Chicago.
Right. We went for what we got. It was the cheapest. As far as expense wise goes, we got so much out of our money this last time, because we had the longest trip for basically the cheapest that I've been on. And right now, I would say count on between 35 and 4. We do everything we can to minimize. And everybody that's gone on trips with me knows I do that. I do everything I can not to make the trip cheap, but to get it as inexpensive as you can. Yeah. And anybody that's gone on these trips,
pretty much all expenses.
Right. I mean, you can go over there and live.
You're
going to survive because you have breakfast.
Your souvenirs you're going to have to pay for and whatnot. Right. But meals are provided. Even now, we were not told to expect lunch, but we even got most.
Yeah, we got a lot of lunches. So I don't know whether they just like us or what. But we got a lot of lunches included, and
But you said between 3,500 and 4,000. You know, when we went, it was 3,300. So you really do push it down.
Yes, yeah, I do everything I can, and plus, if we're going to be doing a little more in the south,
and again, that included airfare. So if you're coming from Europe or you know, South Africa, I've got listeners everywhere.
Yeah,
you know, it's going to be
or Jordan.
Jordan.
Just off the border.
If I have listeners in Jordan, they haven't contacted me. Yeah, I mean, we can get a land-only price I think our airfare was about 700 round trip.
And that was what really drove the price down.
Right.
And
so, but that's why we had to go out of Chicago as well.
And so I certainly will be looking at every possible angle to minimize, and our hotels are great hotels.
We
don't cut corners as far as the quality of the trip. Mm-hmm. The stops, the transportation. I think everybody that has gone on our trips would be unanimous that would say everything was top quality. It's just I understand that this is an expensive trip, and the more you can lower it, the more it's going to enable people to be able to go.
Yeah. Well, this is probably the second longest podcast episode I'll ever have. I think the first was was when we did the whole pre-wrath thing.
Okay.
It was way back at the beginning. So we need to close, but definitely check out echozoe.com/76 for more information. And as we get closer to another tour, I'll be announcing things, and we'll definitely be directing anyone interested to how you can join us on the next tour.
Yeah, thanks, Andy. It's always the reason why it's long is because it's hard not to talk about it
we really only could gloss over a lot of that stuff that really, you know, is there's a lot to see and a lot to enjoy, a lot to take in, and we just don't have time to talk about it. But
thanks, Ryan. Yeah, thanks, Andy.
Echo Zoe Radio is an outreach of Echo Zoe Ministries. If you are blessed by the show, please consider offering your support. There are many things you can do to help, including prayer, sharing the show with others, and your financial support. Echo Zori Ministries is a registered nonprofit organization with 501c3 tax-exempt status, and your donations are tax-deductible. For more information about how you can support Echo Zori Ministries, please visit echozoe.com/support.
That wraps up episode 76. Thanks for listening to Echo Zori Radio. For abbreviated show notes and a teaser trailer to Jerusalem's King, visit echozoe.com/76. If you're interested in more information or possibly want to join the Mount Moriah Foundation Tour of Israel in February 2016, please email me at andy@echozoe.com. Don't forget to follow Echo Zoe on Twitter. It's at Echo Zoe. Or like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Echo Zoe Ministries. Lord willing, we'll be back in September for episode 77 of Echo Zoe Radio.